Okay. Today's question and answer. Feel free to ask any question regarding meditation or the teaching of the Buddha. And I expect that there will be no much question. Okay.
I have a question, sister. So, there's three things that said that we cling to: clinging to sense pleasure, clinging to existence, and clinging to non-existence. I believe I understand those on the gross level. Like clinging to existence is like clinging to life, but is it also encompass clinging to becoming, like clinging to becoming something, or clinging to not becoming something?
Something is what?
Clinging to be like a. To live as like a, like clinging to become the human, clinging to become a doctor, clinging to become something that you're not, or clinging to become something that you don't want to be. So like
that is gross level. That's not deep level.
Okay.
That's gross one, gross level. Of course, it's one type of clinging, but it's not what Buddha meant.
Okay.
That type of clinging is not deep. Clinging to existence itself, for a life to continue one after another, next life, that is strong force that bring new, that bring renewed existence. That clinging to as a doctor, as a lawyer, as a rich person, that is comparative, is very minor type of clinging.
Clinging to not existence, to not have existence, or basically to be annihilated,
mm-hmm.
is that that seems to me to be that the first two types of clinging seem to be very common, like everybody has it.
Yes.
So the third one, I guess it seems like not many people have that, like clinging to not existence. That,
but many Americans have that. not Asian, but many Americans have that. Those who believe in materialism, they believe after death nothing exists. And clinging to non-existence is associated with wrong view of annihilation. It's always associated with wrong view of annihilation. Because of that wrong view, he believes that nothing exists after death. In fact, he clings to that view. Not cling to non-existence, he cling to that view that become the fault. Mm.
And even though he clings, he wants so much to be annihilated and believes that that's the end, he still obtains rebirth. Even though he has no want for sensual desire, he has no want for existence, there still comes rebirth, even though he wants to be annihilated.
Yes, because the causes for the rebirth is not exhausted yet. The causes for rebirth is ignorance and craving. Ignorance and cravings are not exhausted. No matter how you wish for not to be reborn, the rebirth was still going on. Because the whole teaching of the Buddhas are cause and effect. So if the effect still intact, how can causes are still intact, how can the effect comply to your wish? If comply to your wish means there is self. But the whole teaching of the Buddha is non-self based on cause and effect. No. I thought you had to ask a question. Okay, no. Okay. Is it clear to you, James, Jimmy?
It's more clear.
I need to. If you want me to elaborate more, I can.
No, I think that's okay. That's good.
And the clinging to becoming is associated with eternalism view, because this view believes that there is permanent soul that transmigrate from one life to another life. In fact, there is a wrong belief, wrong view of eternalism.
given the depth of Dharma that we talk about, it's very appreciated. Yet, I feel like a lot of deep practice is predicated on right view.
Yes,
without right view, it's
yes.
fake.
Yes, that's why in the number four path, right view is number one.
Okay, okay. Given that, as a lay person who doesn't, who has yet to renounce, what would be the recommended way to develop that right view? Meditation makes sense, but it feels like when you get to things such as the clinging and that's the cause of dukkha, it makes sense, but you don't have the full experiential knowledge without the view. So where should we start with the right view?
If for a lay person, another right view which is very important in teaching of the Buddha is what is wholesome, what is unwholesome.
Okay.
If you have knowledge of, as a lay person, because you are, you have to live in this world, you know. So you must thoroughly understand what is wholesome, what is unwholesome. When you understand what is wholesome, what is unwholesome, it is also related to the law of karma. So if you can understand what's wholesome, what's unwholesome, and how it relates to the law of karma, that is very, for a lay person, is very important right view that can lead your life to a better one. Then I think lay person should cultivate this one.
Okay.
Then at a time goes on, then you understand more the Four Noble Truths. You understand more the suffering, where the suffering comes from, then you work to eradicate that suffering.
Because it feels like I conceptually get it, but then I can get deeper in that, that space. Yeah.
And also, if you want to know deeper, if you can examine your life constantly, you know, awareness of your suffering, you know, what you cannot get, you know, or separation, you can investigate more. How, you know, how suffering in life, I think gradually you come to appreciate noble, Four Noble Truths. Okay. Now your turn.
Dear sister, this time of, I think that there are a lot of disasters or unfortunate events like Boston or some explosion. A lot of unease and terrible things happening in the world. And as a, you know, we, as a Buddhist, like I'd like to ask you that: what can we do to enhance the world peace or to help with the positive energy? And we, you know, besides, we try to help each other.
Okay.
On the way here, I'm thinking, what can we do?
That's very easy question. Very easy to solve. To me, it's very easy to solve. Just practice more loving kindness and compassion. Practice more loving kindness and compassion, and you should not, we should not underestimate the power of loving kindness and compassion. You may think only, just radiate loving kindness and compassion. What can I, what can we help them? No, my energy can travel. My energy can affect another person. No, so if let's say we everybody generate more love and compassion, then we affect even the how to say inanimate things. Not to say animate things. Animate things like a person who have life, you know. But even those organic things without life also will be affected by us. In Anguttara Nikaya, Buddha said, in one region or one country, if a king is unrighteous, then all his followers also will become unrighteous. And all this unwholesome energy created by their mind affect the whole system of their own country, even up to the orbit or the how the system.
Universal.
So, and gradually, many disasters will happen. This mentioned in Anguttara Nikaya. Many disasters will happen, flood, you know, tsunami, earthquake. Even the planet will, they will change location because of that unwholesome mental energy. So Buddha has mentioned very clearly. So the only way to change us, to change the universe, to change the universe and to change the whole world is to change our thoughts. I don't see other way. I see that is the only way. To change our thoughts. Then you change other people, you change everyone, and you change the whole world, you change the whole universe. But changing our thought is the most difficult one. Because of ingrained nature to the repeated birth. Huh? Our mind is just full of lust, anger, irritation, jealousy. So to change our thought is not an easy task. Everybody has to try his best.
I got a question.
Okay.
So after the retreat, mm-hmm. I went back home. I actually Googled your past experience, and I was very curious, right? So I noticed that you actually got a degree, and then later on, you started practicing meditation, and then later on, you decided you want to be ordained, right?
Mm.
I want to ask you what actually made you to make that decision.
This personal thing.
Oh, it's a personal. Okay, yeah.
No, it's okay. Okay, you can ask. My decision is very easy because I see it's a waste of time for me to stay as a lay person. As a lay person, you spend a lot of time working. You spend a lot of time earning a livelihood, right? You can, for example, you work from 8 o'clock until 5 o'clock. Sometimes you bring the home, the work back, and the mind still linger on your business, on your work, you know. That it drains the energy. It drains a lot of wholesome energy. And my main concern is that, and we spend a lot of time earning a livelihood just to get money. Of course, for some men, they get satisfaction, you know. But to me, I don't need that much money to survive. I don't need that much money to survive. Therefore, why should I spend so much time to work?
What about other things? For example, getting married, having children, other, you know, other things.
That never come across to my mind.
Never.
Well, actually, no, I think it's, I gradually understand myself. I just cannot live with people. Mm. I cannot live with people because my mind is very fast. I'm also a very impatient person. My mind acts very fast, you know. And I think I already foresee the suffering of married life. And the whole of my life, I never like to have any children. Even though when I was young, you know, I like people's children, but not my own. I like to play with the baby, but if it's my own, no. Why? Because I see the attachment to one's own children. Even though I do not get married, I already see it very clearly in my mind. The attachment to the one's own children is a great suffering. I think I foresee it. Therefore, it never marriage life never draw my attention. But most important, I don't want to waste my time working to earn a livelihood. I'm not interested in that. And to me, money is not so important. As long as I can survive, you know, we only need ropes, food, and sleeping place. That's all.
Interesting. I think this actually bring up a general question.
Mm-hmm.
So, I guess, you know, there are people like you, right? Mm-hmm. So once mm-hmm. you foresee something mm-hmm. is coming, mm-hmm. and then you can easily make a decision.
Yes, yes.
But I think for a large amount of people, mm-hmm. even though they can see clearly what's going to come,
mm-hmm.
but they're still going to make the wrong decision mm-hmm. because of other, you know, like, mm-hmm. I don't know because of what. Maybe emotion, maybe other things.
Right? Hindrances.
Hindrances, right?
Yes, yes.
So
I think I think my mind is more matured in many ways, more developed. I shouldn't say matured, more developed in many ways. For example, sensual pleasures I am not interested in sensual pleasures at all. And this is not without reasons. This has been cultivated through many lifetimes. If you believe in past life existence, so it has been cultivated through many lifetimes. For example, I become nun. Today I want to become nun. Tomorrow I ordain. I never think, oh, what will happen? I never think of that. So this has been cultivated through many lifetimes. Okay, other people, they also can foresee, but they're still struggling because the mind is not developed fully yet.
So how should they develop their mind? Any suggestions?
Practice more. Practice more concentration and always reflect the mystery of life. No?
The mystery of life.
Yes, for example, when you quarrel with your wife, you know, when there's separation in the family, there's a lot of misery, a lot of pain, a lot of suffering in life. If you can contemplate more, then gradually you will get detached. You get detachment. Mm-hmm. But I don't have to contemplate that. That is already come. It's together. It's also already inside me.
Mm-hmm. One last question.
Okay.
So, also generalizing from that, right? Let's suppose if everybody can be like you,
this hypothesis is not not possible.
Not possible.
Yeah. Hypothesis, you must make it something possible. This is not possible. Because Buddha say those who are free from the net of bondage is very, very few. Those who are caught in the net of sensuality, so numerous, that's not possible.
Yeah, I think my question is more of in general, we don't want that either, right? Because if you think about it, if everybody sort of give up everything,
that's not impossible.
Right?
I say, yeah. Mm.
So
that's not possible.
That wouldn't be even if that's possible. Mm. That wouldn't be good, right? From your perspective, because from my perspective,
no. I think it, since it's not possible, we don't have to discuss.
Okay.
It's no point.
Okay.
Yes.
There was a woman that asked the question Thursday night. Mm-hmm. I know that she has small children, mm-hmm. and she asked, mm-hmm. "How can we love mm-hmm. without attachment?" Mm-hmm. And your answer was, mm-hmm. "Well, I've never had kids, mm-hmm. so I don't know. Mm-hmm. But probably you do have some ideas about how." You know, for the people who are in relationships and who do have children, how can you love without attachment?
I don't think I can guide them well because I don't have children.
I think you mentioned, you said when it becomes unbearable, you will just let go. Is that the only resolution? That was just to add on to what her question said.
Maybe.
That was kind of your answer to that lady's question. You said the attachment becomes unbearable.
Yes, then you let go. Yes. I think this is also my character. If my mind get very annoyed by certain thing, I sever it quickly. I let go it very quickly.
Is there any other methods?
No, I don't know that. I don't have. Maybe you should ask somebody else.
Someone who has attachment.
Yes. I have attachment, of course. I have attachment.
It's different.
But when I see that attachment make me suffering, then I try my best to give it up as soon, as quickly as possible. Mm. But some people, when they find the attachment, they still cannot give it up. Right?
Yeah. Mm. Because I understand the attachment we learn can cause suffering. So sometimes maybe we fear attachment, but then we still attach. Kind of like it's like an unending cycle.
Yes,
we need to somehow.
Yes, that's like we need persistent effort to work on it. Mm-hmm. It's not easy.
Yeah.
Even I become nun already, I still see it's not easy. Mm-hmm. You've got to constant work on it, persistent effort.
Mm-hmm. So it's like not just cling and then try to push and then cling and push. It's like doesn't feel balanced.
Mm-hmm. Then it takes a very long time.
Yeah.
It takes a very long time to eradicate this attachment. Mm.
Practice meditation and see and, what and, wholesome.
Yes, more mindful all the time. Be mindful all the time
more
and see the see the danger of the attachment. Only then you are willing to give up. If you feel that it's so enjoyable to have children, to have married life, how can you you will not have any intention to give it up. That not even occur in your mind. Because you already think having children, having wife, having families is very pleasant. Then you will never have a thought to give them up. Right? Therefore, it's to have always think of misery, suffering of, you know, of married life, of having children, and so on. Yes.
From a social perspective, I understand that in the Buddha mentioned that there's a good balance needs to happen between the lay people and the renunciates. So they support each other.
Yes, right.
That said, is it impossible? I'm sure it's very improbable, but is it impossible for a lay person to find awakening? Or can they, through diligent effort, still find that awakening without necessarily having to renounce in such a formal way?
Of course. Buddha said in the Sutta, I think in 73, Mahavacchagoda, I think Sutta. Then this ascetic, this wanderer from another sect asked Buddha, he said, you have attained the supreme knowledge. No, is any other bhikkhu attain it? Mm-hmm. Then the Buddha said, not even one, hundred, thousands. Then he asked again, is any lay person, as he asked, lay person attain it? Not only one, hundred, thousands.
Mm-hmm.
So, lay person can attain, but not arahantship, maybe non-returner.
Mm-hmm.
Non-returner. Lay person can achieve up to non-returner.
But to progress further, there has to be some renunciation eventually.
No. After they attain the non-returner, then they may not. His mind just cannot enjoy sensual pleasures anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But before he attained, he can enjoy sensual pleasures.
Mm-hmm.
But after attaining, he cannot enjoy sensual pleasures anymore. But he still can maintain his lay life.
Okay.
So it's possible that lay person can attain high level of attainment.
Mm-hmm.
But I would like to say that is during Buddha's time.
Mm-hmm.
Now you see American life, so materialistic.
Mm-hmm.
So to attain what the lay person has attained in Buddha's time, I think it's not easy.
Yeah.
Yes.
Easy.
Yeah. So sometimes we must be also practical. Huh?
Mm-hmm.
The poor country is more easy to practice. People can practice Dhamma more easily in poor countries, not in materialistic country like America. It's so easy, so difficult to practice Buddhism.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, clinging for existence, I find that very difficult because I don't fear too much, but I still fear death. Even I don't want to, even a non-returner has a desire for material existence.
Yes.
And for
it's
existence.
True. Yes.
What meditation subjects or training or practice can I undertake to help with that?
I think vipassana. Vipassana meditation. Vipassana meditation is to see impermanence, suffering and non-self nature of existence. When you see enough impermanent nature of existence, the mind will naturally let go. Before you can see the danger, the fault of existence itself, even though you do not incline your mind to existence, but the attachment, the latent defilements of greed still attached to existence. Therefore, Buddha's teaching is, in order to realize the teaching of Buddha, you have to practice. Theory is not enough. Theory completely not enough, but theory is very helpful for you to direct your mind to the goal. You know what you are practicing, you know. But theory is theory, it's not your first hand knowledge. So you have to practice vipassana until you see everything, until you experience everything you see, you hear in your body is passing away, dissolution, dissolution, dissolution. Then you get awakened. Then you start to let go your attachment to arising and passing away, because you know you cannot control it. So the best way is to let go. Only then, craving for existence can be solved. Without that, no, I don't think it's possible. Even seeing one time constant arising and passing away is also not enough. You have to see 100 times, 1,000 times in order to let go completely. So Sotapanna stream enterer, he only see partially, 25%. That's why I have 3 stages to go to continue, right? So if you want to sever the craving for assistance completely, you got to continuously see it, experience it until your mind is completely liberated from clinging. I don't see other way, it is the only way.
Able to practice vipassana in that way, I guess my sense is you would need a strong level of concentration. So what types of concentration meditation do you recommend for beginners? Like mindfulness of breathing and loving kindness?
Loving kindness meditation is very useful for the peace of the mind, because if the mind is constant agitated, you know, the life is so full of misery. So I think loving kindness is very useful to make the mind happy. However, loving kindness meditation, the concentration of loving kindness meditation does not go as deep as mindfulness of breathing. So you have to, I think it's okay to practice two, mindfulness of breathing and loving kindness meditation. And of course, vipassana. These three should be enough.
Sometimes I don't really think about it, I guess. I just, my mind goes to my breath and my day-to-day activity.
Say it again.
I notice my breath a lot more now, in my day-to-day activity. It just comes to me very often.
Good.
Is that something that is a progression then?
Yes.
I don't really think I should think about my breath. I just notice it when I do the things.
Yes. Maybe you have more mindfulness.
It slows down things very much.
Yes, good. This is called daily practice. If you can keep this continuously, then you will progress faster.
So the next question then is that is a level of concentration. But then, as I slow down my mind for breath by breath, if I can automatically apply a vipassana every breath, then. That's also something that.
How you apply vipassana in every breath? How?
Every breath rises and passes. It's not self, it's impermanent.
Okay, you can try. You can try and see after 1 year, see whether your mind changes or not. If it changes, then it works. If it doesn't change, then it may not work well. You got to be very patient and see. The progress won't come so fast.
Right.
By hatching the eggs very slow. Don't expect.
Yeah.
Is how you practice anything?
Last time I stayed in Burma for many years. In Burma, we practice intensively. You know, we have schedule, get up 3:30, get up 3:30 and sleep at about 9 o'clock. Then we have, every day we have sitting, 5 or 6 sitting, each sitting 1.5 hours. So I practice very intensively in Burma for many years. But after I left Burma, I think I feel that I should stop practice intensively. I think to learn the Dharma, for beginning, we should practice meditation more. But if a person have been practicing for so many years, I think sometimes it's good to stop intensive, and to cultivate more different type of Dharma in daily life, like relationship with people, that you can learn a lot, because it's also a lot of suffering to relate with people. So from that suffering you will learn again, you know. So nowadays I didn't practice so intensively like I have practiced in Burma, but basically morning meditation is very important for me. I sit at least, you know, 1 hour, 1.5 hours to 3 hours. Sometimes I sit 3 hours. When I was in New Jersey, 1 month, every morning I sit 3 hours. But now I sit about 2 hours a day. And in my daily life, you know, if there's any, if my mind, if there's nothing pop up in my mind, I just read my book, writing my book. But if there's something pop up in my mind that annoy my mind, then I contemplate impermanent, non-self condition again and again, and get disenchanted with all this suffering again and again. That is how I practice. So I practice sitting and contemplate impermanent in my daily life.
Did you read the Dharma a lot? The Sutra?
Of course. That is very important. Without Sutta base, you cannot be a good speaker. And your talk cannot be very convincing, because all the Sutta has come from Buddha's wisdom. We don't have Buddha's wisdom. Therefore, we have to read the Sutta in order to enhance our knowledge.
Is it a benefit to a lay person to study the Vinaya Pitaka at all?
I think Sutta is more beneficial. Vinaya is for monk. Mm-hmm. Okay.
But it's, so it really doesn't have any too much use for layman then?
If you want to judge a monk, whether he's a virtuous monk or not, then you read Vinaya. You can judge, oh, this monk, not according to Vinaya. This monk. But if you don't have that intention to judge a good monk or a bad monk, I don't think it's necessary.
Speaking of renunciation, I'm just curious how that progression went for you. I mean, you said you thought of it one day and then you became a nun. Mm-hmm. If any of us were to decide to shave, what would it be like? Just in general. I know it's very specific to your situation, but like, did you call Google? I mean, did you Google the monastery or something? How did you? How would you do it?
By the way, there's a website called Let Google Do It For You.
I think my case is a bit different, because before I became nun, I have been practicing intensively as a lay person. I give up my job already, because the job takes up my time. Time to me is very precious. We need time to practice, right? If I don't have time to practice, then I'm not going to work. I'm not interested in earning money. So I give up my job and I go for intensive meditation, staying in meditation center. So I practice as a monk and nun, although I'm a lay person at the time. So after I have been practicing for three years without working, 1.5 years or about 2 years without working and stay in the meditation center. Then I decided, I have been staying there for 1.5 years or 2 years already. What's the difference as a lay person and as a nun? Then just decided to become nun. But as a lay person, if you want to renounce the world, I have some advice for you. It's very important. There are two important factors. Number one, you must have a good teacher. Good teacher is so important. If you follow the wrong one, you end up suffering. And second, you must have, I think the second one is related to the first one. If the teacher has monastery, then you can stay there, you know, at least 5 years. And according to Vinaya, also monk have to stay 5 years with his preceptor who ordained him, you know. But if he has no monastery, then it's very difficult for you to follow him. Because he's wandering around. You cannot follow him wandering around, right? So I think the most important is to choose a good teacher first before you decide to renounce.
And to know a good teacher, you should already have a good practice so you can see.
Yes, you must have good knowledge. And as Jimmy said, if you have Vinaya knowledge, then you know which one is a good monk. And also you have good practice in order to be able to acknowledge which one is good monk, which one is good meditator, you know. From his talk or her talk, you can assess whether he or she has good experience or not. But if you yourself don't have, you may not be able to assess him.
I know this is a vast topic, but can you briefly touch on the Noble Eightfold Path and the role it plays in Buddhism? I know it's a vast topic, but just make some cursory comments about that.
Noble Eightfold Path in the role of Buddhism.
In the role of Buddhism, particularly for lay people.
I'm not lay people. Difficult to talk about. I think you asked the same question 2 years ago. this question still puzzles you. Noble Eightfold Path is the only path Buddha say, because when you talk about Noble Eightfold Path, it is related to Four Noble Truths. Four Noble Truths, Buddha say, what's Noble Truth of suffering? Birth, aging, sickness, death, separation from beloved one, association from the hate one, and cannot get what you want. And finally, the five clinging aggregate is the cause of suffering. Is it clinging to your five aggregate? Clinging to your mind and body is the cause of suffering. Then Buddha say, then what is the origin of the suffering? Craving. Craving for sensual pleasures, craving for existent and craving for non-existent. So Buddha say the suffering, and Buddha tell you also the cause of suffering. However, Buddha is a very skillful teacher. The Dhamma does not stop here. Buddha say that, but it is also possible to bring to the end of that craving that brings suffering. And what is that possible? What is that path? That is Noble Eightfold Path. So Noble Eightfold Path consists of three trainings. Number one is called morality training, which is largely neglected in USA. Okay, morality training. The second one is concentration training, which is also largely ignored in USA. The last one, insight. Vipassana training, we call wisdom training. Wisdom training is practiced in USA, but not complete, because in USA people practice only with mindfulness more. They practice mindfulness more, not complete vipassana. So therefore, you know, it's something missing in USA. So this Noble Eightfold Path, first we practice morality training in order to overcome the transgressing refinements, that very gross type of refinement, like wanting to tell lies, wanting to utter harsh speech, wanting to kill, wanting to slaughter animals, wanting to shoot animals, wanting to break other people's relationship, and so on, and especially the sexual intercourse. Sexual intercourse is also included in this morality training. Abstain it is included in morality training. So this morality training helps to get it, to help to rid of all gross type of refinements. We call transgressing refinement. And without getting, without pushing away, without get rid of this gross type of refinements, the mind is still very gross, very, very gross. When the mind is very gross, then you come for concentration, then your mind is beset by all restlessness, by the remorse, by the restlessness, by the doubt, and so on. So the concentration may not go, may not go well. So once you perfect the morality training, then the gross type of refinement has been removed. Then you come to concentration, your mind can concentrate well. Only when your mind can concentrate well, then you can move on to insight meditation in order to see the five aggregates as they really are, as impermanent, suffering, and non-self. So this is the summary of Noble Eightfold Path. For layperson, you have to purify your morality first, especially the five, abstaining from killing, stealing, telling lies, sexual misconduct, and abstaining from taking intoxicant. Because in America, many people like to drink beer, like to go to bar, drink beer, or take make the mind intoxicated. This taking beer or drugs, that make the mind intoxicated, it itself is not something unwholesome, you know. But when the mind get intoxicated, then you lose the normal consciousness, and at that time you will easily break other precepts. Many of my devotees told me that her husband, who was a drunkard, alcoholics, before he take any alcohol, he is perfectly good man. After he took all the alcohol, and he came mad, and he started to beat his wife, beat his son and daughter. Therefore, abstaining from alcohol, so that you will not lose your normality of consciousness, then you will not break, you will not beat other people, you will not kill other people, you will not have other harsh speech to hurt other people, and so on. This is the purpose of abstaining from taking alcohol. And also, if you take alcohol, that make your mind unclear in your next life, if you believe in rebirth, of course. If you don't believe, then it's up to you. You know, the next life, your mind also will become a very dull person. Your mind is very unsharp, very dull, because of past life intoxication. One thing I feel that when I come to USA, in Asia, we believe strongly in rebirth, in past life and future life rebirth. But in America, I seldom talk about this issue, because most of Americans do not believe in rebirth. And why is this so? Because they cannot see through their experience. But I want to ask, how much you have developed your mind that you can see through your past life? Right? Past life, if you have developed your mind into certain extent, then your past life will reveal to you. But if you have not trained your mind, and you say that I do not believe because I cannot see it, then the question is, the problem comes from you, because your limited mind just cannot see far, cannot reach far enough. Therefore, I don't have intention to convince Westerner to believe in past life, because it's up to you to believe or not. You believe, you gain. You don't believe, it's a loss. Important, we must question ourselves, how much our limited mind can see. This is the main problem. Buddha has been cultivated so many lifetime concentration and insight meditation. Therefore, he has developed a vision that make him see far. But we do not yet develop that type of concentration and insight. So how can we compare with Buddha? Therefore, in the beginning, we must have faith in what Buddha said. Because Buddha emphasized in his cycle of birth and death, Buddha practiced 10 parami, 10 perfections, and one of the important perfections he cultivated is truthfulness, speaking the truth. For many, many lifetimes, he is ready to sacrifice his life, but not telling lies. Therefore, if he said that there's rebirth, there's past life, there's law of karma, there's future life, we believe him out of faith first. Without faith, you cannot progress. You cannot move forward because you doubt of everything. How can you move forward? So depend on faith. The faith in him that what he says is correct, then we practice to see whether what he say is correct or not. This is not blind faith. But in the beginning, we have faith in him, but if we stop there, then we may say this is blind faith. In the beginning, we have faith in him, but later on, we practice in order to see, to check what he say is correct or not. Then it's no more blind faith. It's through your practical experience to prove what he say is correct or not. So it's very important. In Asia, we practice the teaching of the Buddha out of faith first, based on the faith first. Then later on, we practice meditation to prove what he say is correct. This is very scientific, right? Scientific also, you must have one hypothesis first. That is also based on faith first. Then you prove whether it's correct or not. Right? It's the same thing.
Question.
Yes.
In that sutra where the bhikkhu was a stream enterer, but he had annihilation view,
mm-hmm.
and the other bhikkhus came.
Stream enterer and he has annihilation view, that's not possible.
Okay, maybe I didn't remember that part.
Mm-hmm.
But it was someone who had annihilation view, and some other bhikkhus came,
mm-hmm.
and they asked him, mm-hmm. is that your view? Mm-hmm. And he said, yes, it's my view. And so then the Buddha came, I think, if I'm remembering it right.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the Buddha said to him, mm-hmm. well, you have annihilation view because mm-hmm. you don't see arising.
Mm-hmm.
You only see passing away, you don't see mm-hmm. arising.
Yes, yes.
And so in my own meditation practice, mm-hmm. I wanted to look for mm-hmm. arising.
Mm-hmm.
and I didn't know really where to look, so I was looking towards where the breath arises, and I tried to look where thoughts arise.
Yes, yes, you can see whatever arises in the body. For example, your emotion. Your emotion arises, then you see, look, observe it, contemplate it, and don't react to it. If you react to it, you interrupt the process. But if you do not react to it, then the phenomena will reveal itself, the impermanency. So you keep on observe it objectively, then you will see it passes away. But it will never stop there. It will arise again. Then if you keep on observing, it passes away, then re-arises again. So you will stand, this is called arising and passing away.
Is it important to see exactly where it arises, or you just notice that it has arisen?
Both are important, but if you can see precisely how it arises, how it passes away, then your knowledge is clearer.
About the confidence.
Confidence?
Confidence, on like a meditation. Because some people, they talk with me that they don't have the confidence when they practice meditation. And sometimes they even are afraid to come to the retreat. And so how the confidence, you can improve or influence the whole practice?
The confidence were what, the last sentence?
I mean, confidence is so important.
Yes,
because you don't have the confidence, so sometimes you are hesitant to practice or hesitant to
I could only say that his or her good karma is not ripe yet. It's the only thing I could say.
So that's a kind of doubt, right?
Yes, this kind of doubt. Doubt, yes. Doubt is one of the hindrances for progress. In order to, you know, to feel comfortable with the Dharma, you need good karma. Without good karma, you know, just like if you don't have good karma to meet with a very good person, even though this person appeared in front of you, you go away. You cannot acknowledge her or him because you don't have a good karma to associate with him or her. Therefore, to reach that person, you just have to wait. Wait for her good karma to ripen. There's no other way. In Buddha's teaching, we emphasize a lot of good karma. Karma is very important. No, you don't have good karma, you have to wait until your karma ripens, then you can start to appreciate.
Do we need to do some more good work to make it more ripe?
Of course.
It will not just ripe by
itself. Of course. You have to accumulate good merit for the good karma to ripen faster. And there is one statement that I would like to share here, but may not be pleasant to Americans' ear. American people start with Buddhism by meditation first, but however, it seems that many of them cannot meet with correct teacher. Is it right, Anna? Anna has been practicing Buddhism for 18 years, but she says she has no good teacher. And I remember many years ago when I was Bhavana Society in West Virginia, there was a monk, Western monk. He has been practicing Dharma for a long time. And when I give a talk there, I say that in order to meet with correct teacher or wise friend or good teacher, you must have certain qualities or prerequisite. Number one is you must be a generous person. Generosity. Second is you must have good morality. These two are important to support you to meet with correct teacher. But Americans start with meditation first. They don't practice generosity that much as Asian people. And they do not train under morality as Asian people, because we start with generosity. We offer a lot to monks, nuns, monastic, and so on. And we keep 5 precepts. And these two things are very important. These two things forms a good karmic force that send you to the good teacher. This is what I discovered for my teaching 10 years in America. And when I tell this to my American, this monk, I do not purposely tell him, but I give a talk. Then he said that now he understands why he do not meet with correct teacher, because he did not practice generosity. That's what he told me. Therefore, in order to, you know, to meet with correct teacher, we always practice generosity and also morality. These are very important to form the good karmic force. This karmic force will send you to the correct teacher. And the correct teacher, when the time is right, the correct teacher just appear in front of you.
Okay. I'm not Buddhist, so I'll give you the respect that I see everybody else. So mm-hmm. out of respect, mm-hmm. I have a friend of mine who mm-hmm. is suffering greatly. You were talking about attachments earlier, mm-hmm. and it's with a boy, and there is something going on in their relationship that's very disturbing right now.
His her boy.
Her boyfriend. Okay. Yeah. So
her boyfriend. Okay.
Yeah, and so she's very upset, very mm-hmm. emotional. Mm-hmm. She's attached and hopeful and fearful of losing this.
Losing the friendship.
Losing the friendship. Mm-hmm. You know, they're no longer intimate. Mm-hmm. But what could she do to maybe help? You know, work through her emotions and get through to whatever acceptance is.
Who have this experience before?
I'm kind of talking about myself too. But she's a great example because she's suffering also.
Any people, I think those who experience it and get through it will give a better advice than me.
Okay. Well, she wants to keep her heart open. She's Buddhist. She doesn't want to put up the wall. She wants to keep open. And of course, with the open heart, you get more intense of the emotion to it. So she wants to stay open, but she wants to, I don't know, I guess,
I think
make it easier.
Yeah, then if you want to make herself, if she want to make herself happy, then she can just say that this boy is not for me.
Right. Yeah, she's not at that point yet.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. But that eventually down the road, that is going to have to be the separation of the. Okay.
I cannot give you good advice because I have no experience.
I do have experience with that. I think it's good that she's a Buddhist so that she's open to contemplation, and it seems it would be beneficial to her to focus on how much suffering she has in her grasping and wanting to maintain the relationship. And in the grasping, there's suffering. Mm-hmm. And if she wants to end suffering, then she will stop grasping for the relationship. I think also there's this idea that the highest happiness is that of a relationship, and if she continues to meditate, she'll find that there's even greater happiness than that which she would find in a relationship.
Hmm. Okay, I'd like to share something. In fact, we feel that, she strongly cling to that boyfriend, to her boyfriend. I think, ultimately, we do not cling to that person, or ultimately she does not cling to that person, but she cling to the happiness the person give her. So now if the person is going to depart from her, she feels that she's losing that happiness. So but now the happiness seems to turn out to be suffering, you know, then she try, she must understand, you know, what she clings is clinging to the pleasant feeling and the happiness she had with that boy. Okay. And this type of happiness is called dependent on. Dependent on external force that which you cannot control. Yes. That is suffering. So why not she start another type of happiness which is independent on anything, on external thing. That's called that comes from meditation. That type of happiness comes from meditation. So if you can let, you can build up, you can find another type of happiness which is independent on others, that is true happiness.
She is, yeah. I mean, she's working through it. It's just hard to watch. And getting the phone calls at 12:30 after she's had a panic attack.
And also, I see suffering is a great lesson for us to learn. I don't reject suffering. I think throughout my life, I just learn from my suffering. So whatever suffering I encounter, after that I start to think, okay, what I have learned from this suffering. And I feel that I learned a great deal that Buddha cannot give me. No one can give me. So it's very important, you know, whenever you have suffering, try to learn from it. Don't suffer for nothing. Make your suffering worthwhile. Then it becomes a very valuable lesson.
So when the suffering teaches you what you need to learn,
it will
go away.
Yes. And that suffering is a great lesson that without that incident, then she may not be able to learn.
True.
No. Then try to think positive in this way may help. It meant for her to learn something.
I think because there's many people here from the board of LBA and other Dhamma friends who are looking for us to succeed, I would like you to, if you can, having spent time in Michigan for these 3 weeks and observed the conditions, maybe offer some advice. I think the really pure intentions of the people at LBA, especially the founders who've been working just really tirelessly for over, you know, like a decade, more than a decade, and still so much hardship, you know, to try to keep this retreat center running, and there's so much goodness that's trying to be established, but I think partly the things you identified about American Buddhism, but also just so many factors. Maybe you've observed some things that would be helpful for us to hear about, maybe how we can, some things we can do, or your suggestions based on your seeing many things across the whole country about what maybe we could establish here to help support the flourishing of Buddhism here.
I think this is a difficult question for me because this LBA is a mixture of both, you know, China. So it's a bit difficult to if it's a one tradition, it's easy to talk about. It's two tradition, you have to keep both. That is a bit difficult. But I could see the the trend in USA is that and the trend nowadays, people are drawn to meditation. People are drawn to meditation, especially American, not Chinese people. Chinese people are drawn to rites and rituals, you know, but American, they are drawn to meditation. So I think if you want to attract more American people to come to LPA, it's very important to emphasize more on meditation. However, as I say, because American practice less generosity, in order to establish a center, we need a lot of support financially. If not, the center cannot run, right? So, and I think this is the problem that LBA face, that they don't have enough financial support to run the center. And if they want to open to more American, and American are not so familiar with, you know, this charity, so they also face their own problem. However, although this is a problem, we should still open our mind, because we want to see things in we want to be more far-sighted. And I believe that I always believe that when we propagate the teaching of the Buddha with good intention, although it's very difficult in the beginning, but with that pure intention and far-sighted, see far, I think all this problem will be overcome one day. And I also believe many Americans are generous, but before they are benefited from the Dharma, they have no faith. Without faith, they cannot perform generosity. Only with strong faith, when they are, you know, benefited from the Dharma, I think they will support generously. Because as you can see, you know, in Spirit Rock in California, people offer billions money to the center, Spirit Rock, or American Buddhist community. So I don't think Americans are not generous, but they are not yet benefited from the teaching, so they cannot be generous. So I think maybe LBA committee board should not feel upset by the temporary shortage of financial support, but put aside the financial thing first and try to think a way out how to propagate the teaching of the Buddha more efficiently and suit the people's needs nowadays. I think people need more meditation. Meditation can purify the mind. So this is so far from my experience in America and what I can see in the future. I think meditation will become very popular and appreciated by modern people, especially American, because they have enough problem with material life. They are going for another aspect, that is spiritual life. I think LBA committee board should think over what is your future trend, and see what you can do. Since you have such a good place, you know, good meditation center, good a piece of land, then it's important to fully use it. That's what I can say. Yeah.
So does meditation also attract young people?
I think it's already become a trend. I think it's also become a course in university. Become a course in university, and of course, people are in university. Most people are young people. Mostly are young people. So it's already become a popular course in university. People major meditation. You know, so I think it can attract young people, but. Some skillful means may be needed. For example, in a retreat, we emphasize on non-talking. But if people are very new to here and come here, start with non-talking, they cannot get used to it. So some orientation, you know, fellowship are important first. To make them more accustomed to the environment here, not direct silent meditation. Some orientation, fellowship are important to attract them to come again, to come back again. And also America is very different from Chinese. Different from Chinese because I'm also Chinese. We can simply, like, if there's any retreat, we sleep in the floor. We don't mind. But for American, that's not okay. I think that's not okay. So I think if you want to improve that, you've got to improve the how to make them sleep comfortable. American and Chinese different tendency, because of their culture. Their culture have been trained to be, you know, live in luxury, in comfortable. So if you want to attract them, you have to let them stay comfortably. Only then they will come back.
Create an environment for them.
Yeah, right.
Actually, it's very true because I had a retreat we had on the last weekend. I had three people that I was orientating. That is true. It took 3 days to three different people I was orienting for at least about 3 days. Brand new. One was a Buddhist who's been here before, and I was trying to get her to come back. So I was orientating, this is how it is, you know, get up in the morning, you sleep on the floor, you share everything, and non-talking. It took a lot, but only one person came. Only one person came who benefited very much. So this orientation, I think it's very, very important. Very important to understand. I think has to be longer than just maybe an hour of talking or something. It has to be a structured understanding, maybe like even, you know, a few hours or something. It's so important.
You mean that it's like a rehearsal of a retreat? The practice of retreat.
Yeah, like structure. You have to tell them why you should be silent. Mm-hmm. There has to be an understanding for them why you shouldn't talk, why you sleep on the floor. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, we come in so much luxury. It's like everything is at hand, and all of a sudden, why sleep on the floor? What does it mean?
Yeah.
That type of understanding it. It takes a lot to orient them. Like I said, I couldn't bring back the person who's been here before. I couldn't. After all the talking.
What shock.
Yeah.
As an American, I feel it was actually good that I was thrown outside to sleep in the dirt. Because it piqued my curiosity. Why would people do that? You know, so I say that because I'm curious. To me, if we pander to the luxury, it's almost dangerous. What should not be touched? You know, I know in some of the more strict vinaya, don't sleep on high luxurious beds, but Americans get to. I don't think that could be dangerous. So, wouldn't your
experience would be something that's just off limits, that we should maintain, as opposed to some things that we can be loose with.
I think you think differently from many Americans.
It wasn't enjoyable, but I stuck with it. Anyway, I just... Okay, I'm good.
What I want to tell you is that Haju Sunima, your talk on... she's the priest at the Zen temple. She says to me, "Are you finding that so many young people are coming now?" And I said, "No." She goes... It's a Zen temple, I guess, and you can probably speak to this. Is it in? She said there are more young people coming, more and more every year, and she's got enormous amounts of young people interested in Buddhism. Now, obviously, she's in a college town, right in the center of the college town, but obviously, that trend is there. You know, so it is a matter of them feeling, you know, the connection or something. Mm.
Can I just make an observation from an outsider? This is my first time, and I really hope I'm not throwing somebody under the bus here. But I Googled and tried to find something local Buddhist for me, and I found this place. The website was informative, but I had no idea there was anything going on last weekend, or I would have attended it. It wasn't on the website. I thought everything says canceled until April 20th, so I assume this place was just shuttered up until April 20th, and this is my first... I mean, I actually made arrangements because I would normally have my children this weekend. And I made special arrangements so I could attend this, And I guess if...
It wasn't a website, it was just kind of very...
Oh, was it?
It was.
It's kind of a long website.
We should operate it.
Actually, there was something this last weekend, but it said it was in... a different location. It wasn't here. I think it was in Ann Arbor or Kalamazoo or something, or Jackson.
Wow.
That's why I didn't go.
You really have good karma.
Thanks.
I think American American Buddhists, they plan in advance, like 6 months in advance, 1 year in advance. That is very important to put in the website, because American, they have, once they fix their schedule, they very difficult to change.
Yeah,
I think you all have to plan 6 months in advance so that to make known to people. That's important. That we Chinese are not good in planning in advance. Because we believe in changing all the time. Life is changing all the time. So when I first come to America, everything is fixed. I say, you all cannot see impermanence.
Not in the schedule.
So I just want to tell you, the Chinese way of doing and America are very different, because we always get ready for change.
Sister, now that you have found a teacher or somebody like me, I'm sure others are thinking of the same. Since we are practicing as lay people and so forth, would there be any possibilities to either email or some sort of a communication method to see how we progress, or anything on one-on-one or something like that? Is there any possibility
to chat with me?
Yes. I want to follow the power method. And it is, like the schedule says, it's very difficult to go places, whether it's Spirit Rock, it's very difficult to go because of work. So from home, to develop your practice, is there any way of communicating and getting some guidance along the way?
I think in the website, if you just what you want, you just Google, you can get many... many resources that can help you, not only me, because there are only many power teachers, they teach the same thing. So I think you now Google it, you can find many information.
Okay.
And there's another thing I want to say, that in American Buddhism, like those centers run by American, usually they charge people. They charge people and very high. Sometimes one day $55, $60 per day. And even though they charge, but the schedule mostly full. Attendance mostly full. So in this sense, I think American, they don't care of paying money to learn Buddhism because their culture is like that, you know, paying money to learn Buddhism. And therefore, maybe there's another alternative that you can think that, you know, in order to maintain the center, any retreat you have, you just charge. This to fit in the American culture.
You know, it's a little mix. You know, we are mixed Chinese and American. So it's especially for Chinese event.
Then for Chinese event, then you just based on donation, based on donation. But for American, those who charge, but American they charge because they provide them good environment. Like I say, not sleeping on the floor because they pay money. They are expecting to have a good environment. So this sense, you have to adjust it a bit.
It's also one American mentality. If you don't charge, if you charge more, they will think this
is better one. Yeah.
So if you don't charge you free, they will think it's not really gonna be worse for them to.
Yes, that's why since we are in America, we have to we have to understand their mentality in order to make things run more smoothly. So don't stick to our old tradition already.
I think we discussed it in the four, and then Maureen also mentioned about that, because the spirit of a Buddha is that it's out of the, you have to provide good dharma and have benefit for people, and they would voluntarily to practice generosity or donation. So that's part of the spirit of Buddhism. So we got caught in that, whether we should stick to the true Buddhist spirit and to inspire people to share, or we should charge and to also create opportunity for people to donate. So put it in a good way that way, and then also the custom of local, the American culture here, that is actually legitimate to set a fee if you provide the content.
I actually Googled sisters next step, and then I saw, wow, they charge you about 600.
$525.
Yeah, and I said, wow, and then. But they do provide scholarship. So I think to answer that, maybe you can set up a higher price, and then you have scholarship in.
Yes, to support those who cannot.
To support for the people that really couldn't afford that.
Yes, to solve the problem.
I think a nice middle way is if I like the way you have it, like a suggested donation.
Yeah,
a lot of times for American, I like that, because for American, or you can maybe even increase it if you need more money. But I think Americans, a lot of times, if you don't suggest something, they're like, donate something. Do I give $1,000 or a dollar? I don't know. So I think if you need more money, you can increase it, or say have it suggested, a student I actually like the donation and having. I just like the idea, but that's just my personal thing. But
I think in Asia, all the Dharma books are free distribution. And they put everywhere. I don't think people appreciate it. People just simply take one, keep in their library, take another one. They never read. Therefore, I decided my book is not for free distribution. Not because that money, I don't need that money, but I just want the reader, when you take your money to buy, you will appreciate that book. This is people's psychology, this is psychology. Human psychology. So, therefore, since here is America, so if you charge, because people appreciate more if you charge, there's value there. Notice human psychology. There's value there. Then you charge them. But for those who cannot come, as he said, we offer scholarship everywhere, like Jackson Field, Spiral Rock, Boston, the Massachusetts, mm-hmm. and also the North Carolina now, they also give scholarship for those who cannot pay full. So this is to balance it.
You know, mm-hmm. sometimes not people cannot pay, because some people complain to me that mm-hmm. we charge for event. Mm. Especially Chinese, so they cannot.
That's why I say in Chinese event, you based on donation. Chinese event or based on, but for American,
they would rather they donate. Like they don't want to charge their fee for come to the event.
I think because when donate, they feel the merit. They get but charged like business. You know, they don't feel they don't feel the merit.
I think the overall, just without getting into all the details, I don't think you're going to boil like the ocean in this meeting, because we're trying to talk about Dhamma, but I think the main thing is, like, you know, you're trying to help people and you're doing Dhamma, but really what you need to do, if you want to make money, when people want to make money, they make a business plan, they have a marketing plan, mm-hmm. you know, to think about, like a business, like, what's this talking about is, like, product. So the product isn't, like, you know, you want to land, people aren't going to pay money to land the ground, mm-hmm. but they'll pay money to go, you know, we'll lay a nice bed, and then to give them stuff, like I know American businessmen, you said, hey, look, you know, if you practice concentration, you're going to be, like, 50% more productive in your job. And there's studies like that, where actually people do that. So it's something where you, like, have a marketing plan, have a sales plan, have, like, figures you want to meet for next quarter. I'm serious. I mean, if you want to make money, you have to think like a business. I mean, you can still, I think, teach the Dhamma and, like, spread the Dhamma. But like you know, the sister said, she's taking that money and then putting it into the temple and then making it so that it grows. Otherwise, because you know, if you look at like churches and stuff, right, American churches, you know, they get millions and millions of dollars, like, because they're running these churches like businesses first, and then you're better to spread the Dhamma. But I think that's just the society that you live in.
Yeah.